Broadcasting from deep within the second realm, you are listening to agoristradio.com.
Hello, this is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. Agoristradio.com is sponsored by MetroPie.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunked. Today we have another special guest following up on several of our recent episodes on Loom. We have somebody who has gone out and implemented another implementation of Loom. And on the phone we have Alex Weed. Alex, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on today. Recently we just were informed about another Loom system that's out there, well, aside from the primary loom.cc system, and that's why we got you on the horn, and we're very grateful that you could come on such short notice and go over some of this stuff. A lot of people are confused or don't understand the difference between Loom, the source code project, and the loom.cc website that is running right now, and Loom assets that are running within that particular implementation. So I will probably go through and sort that out. We're dying to know what you're doing with this system and why you went with your own system. And like, before we get started, can you give us a little introduction to who you are, where you came from, and how you're involved with all this great stuff that's happening out in New Hampshire? And then after that, we'll fly into this topic of what you're doing with Loom.
Okay. Well, my name is Alex Weed. I was born in Somerville, New Jersey, right in the center. And I was originally very interested in liberty. I wasn't always like that when I was young, but I was looking for liberty-oriented talk radio, and I was able to find a talk radio show called Free Talk Live, and I became very interested in these ideas of voluntarism, freedom to do what you want, the non-aggression principle. Mm-hmm. And through Free Talk Live, there was an advertisement for what is known as the Free State Project. For your listeners who don't know, the Free State Project is a movement of 20,000 liberty-loving activists to the state of New Hampshire for the purpose of, at a minimum, reducing the size and scope of government. And what they're seeking to do is get 20,000 people who believe in smaller government, at a minimum, to move to New Hampshire so that we can effect greater change. And my parents asked me where I wanted to go to college, and I told them the University of New Hampshire, unequivocally.
Right.
And that's how I became to come to New Hampshire and meet up with the activists here and get involved in the community.
Super. What made you get involved with setting up a Loom system? Because I know a lot of stuff is going out there. You mentioned the Free Talk Live. There's also another radio network out there which plays Free Talk Live with many other liberty based hosts and shows, and you can find that station at lrn.fm. There's a lot of stuff going on out there, but I haven't seen that much in terms of cypherpunk and digital cash and Loom, value transfer systems and the like. So how did you run into Loom, and why did you put up a system instead of just using the Loom .cc system? What are you looking at doing, and what's going on with your system?
Well, originally, when I was 16, I had a lot of trouble conducting online transactions. The reason is because I didn't have a bank account, and the bank wouldn't let me have one, and I wasn't allowed to have any kind of accounts on anything, and that really frustrated me. And I was looking for a payment system for me to use that didn't really care how old I was. And I found this website called PeckUnix, and I was very intrigued by trading gold. I understood through various readings on, for example, LouRockwell.com and Mises.org, that the dollar is going to run into a very, very, very big problem soon. And I wanted to get into gold, and I was on PeckUnix, and I couldn't really figure out a way to get gold into my account and start using it with people. So it was hard for me to advocate using it. As a 16-year-old kid, I don't really have the ability to do bank wires and stuff like that with thousands and thousands of dollars to these people that I have no clue who they are. It's very intimidating to try and get into gold. Mm-hmm. So, especially with people just on the internet that I've never seen, I don't know where any of this money's going. I don't know if the gold is really there.
Yeah.
And through a website called Ray Servers, I was clicking around out of curiosity, and I found a website called Loom.cc. Mm-hmm. And my curiosity was piqued because it's a payment system, but it's invite only. And just the fact that it's invite only, it gives it that secret club aspect.
Yeah.
And my curiosity had to be catered to. So I looked into it. I started reading about how it worked, and I was able to contact the owner, Patrick, and we were able to have some good discussions about it. And I was able to get an account on Loom. And to people who don't know what Loom is or who are trying to figure out how it works, it may be intimidating. And it was kind of intimidating or confusing and frustrating at first for me. But right. there is an aha moment where it just clicks.
Oh, yeah.
And you understand everything, and it's not complicated at all.
Right.
So for people who are struggling to try and figure out how it works, just give it time, let it digest in your brain, because you too will have that aha moment, and you will see just how simple and easy it really is.
Yeah, that's great. That's one of the reasons we're working on several of these shows. Although the first show we did with the Loom was Loom for Geeks. We kind of got a little bit technical there, but this show is cypherpunk, so that's to be expected. But some of the other shows we're doing, like the first one was Loom for Dummies, and we're going to do several episodes on that. And we have plans for some screencasts to go along with the audio. And of course, we can throw that up on video afterwards on some of the basic procedures to help people have that aha moment much earlier in the process. And we've already received feedback from people that are getting Loom now for the first time, even though they've read articles on it and they've talked to people about it and it's discussion groups, and some people even have accounts, but they just haven't been able to get out of this the PayPal paradigm, if I can call
right,
it that.
Right.
One thing I wanted to make clear is that Patrick is not the owner of the Loom CC. That is run by some other entity, but he is the programmer of the code, and he does do updates for the Loom.cc site, but only as a contractor, not as the operator. And that's just something that I brought up because he made a very big point in a previous show about that fact. So just a little side note. Well, first off, let me ask this. Why did you put up your own system? Oh, for people, let people know, we're talking about another Loom system. Everyone's familiar with loom.cc. There's another separate, completely separate system running in its own server, its own website, and it sounds like a little bit of customized code base. We'll get into that a little bit later. But this website is called porkloom.net, porkloom.net. And when I first saw that pork loom URL, the PORC, the first thing it triggered in my mind was this Liberty get together. It's more than a conference. It's this, what do you call this pork fest coming up in New Hampshire?
Well, to give your listeners a little background, the Free State Project has adopted the porcupine as the official logo of the Free State Project.
Okay.
And the reason they did that was because a porcupine is a cute little cuddly creature, but if you try and get in its way, you're going to get a face full of quills.
Okay.
So it really embodies don't tread on me.
Yes, exactly.
So that's where the pork, you know, everything in the liberty movement that, you know, I can think of has pork. It's prefixed with pork. So in the summer, June 20th, in that area, in northern New Hampshire, there is an event called Pork Fest, and that's kind of a very socially relaxed get together of liberty activists, whether or not you're in the Free State Project, at a campground. I believe it's called Rogers Campground, and people just go there and have a good time, camp out. Really laid back. They have speakers and events and hiking, and it's a social event, and it's supposed to be a lot of fun. Unfortunately, because I'm a student, I stay in the dorms, so I got to go back to Jersey for the summer, and every time I go back, I miss New Hampshire. But so I won't be able to attend Pork Fest, but that's the event that's going on this June.
Yeah, and for the agorist out there, I and the advertisements on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM, and the Free Talk Live show, I've heard there's going to be all these vendors there from local and some national, and they're going to be selling things, and they even use the word come down and see the free market in action in what they're calling Agorist Valley. And many listeners also are familiar with the agorist smash hit classic Alongside Night. From what I heard in the advertisement, it sounds like J. Neil Schulman is going to be speaking at this event also. So it's something that I really hope that myself or somebody from the radio can make it. And we're talking about it, and it would be really nice. So you have this website, porkloom.net. Why did you put up your own website instead of using the existing Loom CC? Because anyone can go into Loom CC right now and issue their own assets.
Correct. Part of the problem is getting an account in the first place. Mm-hmm. I felt that the Loom system was a little esoteric, trying to get in and get an account. On the internet, you don't really know anybody. You kind of have to go through some back channels, and it's very difficult for new people who end users, customers, who just want to get in and start using an asset to get on this website, especially because you need usage tokens in order to create an account, and you have to get them from somebody. So what I wanted to do was create a Loom of my own that was more community-based and more local, because I can't really see Patrick. I don't know who's running the server. I don't have any information about this. And I think that trust is a very important thing in the community and your reputation. I believe that your reputation is everything. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to put this system out to people in the in the New Hampshire community,
right?
Because they can see my face, they can meet me, they can have lunch with me, and we can talk in person, face to face, so that we can really build rapport with each other, so that we can get to know each other. And I think that would go a long way to having more people adopt this way of trading assets.
Yes, yes, that's true. And in a show that we did last night that I was part of with Patrick, that was one of the things that was brought up, was the fact that there can be, that this Loom system is not the be, the Loom.cc is not the be all end all of this project in any way at all. This is just one server, and Patrick sees a Loom system, or a network of Loom, not necessarily with them all integrated and communicating with each other, but thousands of these servers set up among communities, different countries, different needs, and the like, exactly like the implementation that you're running right now. On a little bit of a tech note, not to get into this, but is there a difference between the code base that you're running and the one
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wrote Porkloom entirely from scratch. I also used the project as a way to learn Ruby. So I'm a novice at Ruby. I've had experience with many other programming languages, but I wanted to really learn this language, and I thought that Porkloom was a great way to get my feet wet with it. And there are mathematical differences between the regular Loom system and Porkloom. The concept, the basic concept, is still the same, but there's just a different spin on it. For example, the grid used in Loom.cc is 128 bits, or 2 to the 128 square. The one that Porkloom uses is 2 to the 256. Okay. They're really when you're talking about numbers that big, it's really irrelevant.
Yeah.
But I'm a fan of cryptography. I'm a fan of security, and unfortunately, people see bigger numbers and they think that it's better. Now, effectively, Porkloom is just as secure as Loom is. If it takes you 10 billion years versus 20 billion years, there really isn't to crack an asset or something. There really is no effective difference there. But I wanted to use the highest grade encryption, mostly because it's another selling point.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people in the Free State or the Liberty community here in New Hampshire are IT people, and they're very skeptical.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that any kind of skepticism can be dealt with.
Okay. But for now, there are some other technical questions that I would like to ask, but we can get into those probably later in the show. But just to be clear, so your implementation of Loom is a complete rewrite in Ruby?
Yes.
Okay, let's come back to that at the end, because I'd be interested in knowing some more technical details of that. But is your code open source?
Yes, it is. It's available on GitHub. It's under the username Porkloom. I have three repositories. There's the client, the server, and the website. They're all separate. And I'm going to work on releasing the code as gems as well, but want to make sure that the code is more stable before I do that. And there's a couple of things that I want to optimize, etc. So that's my plan. It's completely open source. Yes, every aspect of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, let's get into the usage of it right now. What has been the response of people that you have shown this to and introduced them to this whole thing? And how long has this server been up and running in an actual production use where people are doing trading and the like on it?
Well, it was really hard initially to get people to understand just how the system worked. I was glad that people in the Liberty community are very open to new ideas, and they were willing to listen to me. And part of most of Porkloom was trying to figure out how to explain it to people. because it's sort of like a chicken and egg problem. You need to understand one thing before you can understand the other thing, and they both – you need to understand both at the same time before you can understand them, if that makes any sense. But there were a lot of people that I've met who sat down and they were willing to listen to me and give me feedback even though I was so bad at explaining this. And through them and through their feedback, I was able to come to the understanding of what is the best way to explain this to people. Mm-hmm. How do people understand it? And not everybody thinks the same. There are people who are of the engineering and math mindset, and I need to explain it to them from a different perspective than the people who are into the more agorist, liberty, kind of civil disobedience. They're not really up on engineering things. So I have to explain it to those two types of people differently. But once I figured that out, then people became very receptive to the idea and found it very interesting. And I've even found a few merchants who want to get it going in their business in New Hampshire. So I'm very thankful for that.
Okay, great. How many assets do you have in the system right now? And can you tell us what they are?
I cannot tell you. Well, Porkloom is very new. Porkloom is very, very, very young. I started coding it. I made the decision that I wanted to make my own in November. And then, you know, finals are coming up, and so I had to deal with that. But over winter break, all I did was run and code Porkloom. And I just kept going and going. I went all through winter break, then all through school, to the detriment of, you know, my sleep. I've been doing it, and then over spring break, and now it's finally coming together.
Okay, great.
This is the time scale we're talking about. In November, you know, I didn't have anything. I just had an idea and a couple lines of Ruby code, and then over spring break, over winter break, I went and bought the domain name, and then I started setting up Ruby on the server and started getting that going, and started installing Passenger and Nginx. But that's another another topic. But
I actually want to cover that at the end of the show.
Yeah. So then I went and I started doing that, and now I am to the point where I can release code. It works. The website is fully functional, it's basically functional, and I have a lot of new ideas that I want to implement on it. So as far as your question about assets are concerned, I don't really know. There's a way for me to find out. I wouldn't want to do that while we're talking live now.
Yeah.
But the database is structured such that I have no clue what the assets are or what they mean to anybody.
Yeah,
the only thing I would be able to tell you is how many assets there are and how many of those assets are in circulation. That's the only information that the database gives me. Now, that's good for auditing purposes. I'm going to open up the database to people in the community so that they can audit it.
What database would you open up to be audited?
So in order for Porkloom to work, it relies on a central database.
Uh-huh.
And I am going to open it up not publicly, but to third-party auditors within the New Hampshire community that I know and trust and that have a solid reputation in the community. And I am going to allow the database to be audited to make sure that both asset issuers and myself aren't trying to do anything funny with it. Now, I would never do anything funny with it because I value my reputation in the community, et cetera. But I want to reassure people as much as possible that this system is sound and that this system is solid. And the best way that I can do that is by allowing third parties to come in and certify that this database isn't being manipulated. So there's a protection for other people. There's a way for them to check me, and there's a way for them to check the issuers. But just looking at the database, you can't get any information other than that out of it. which is why I love the concept. If my server were to be seized by the feds, there'd be no way that they could get any information. Now, the reason why I don't open the database to everyone all the time is because then it would allow them to track changes, and they could maybe extrapolate that way what's going on, which is why I'm going to open it to third parties, but trusted third parties who have a solid reputation in the community, and they would only be able – they would have certain restrictions as to what they could do with it.
Right.
So
okay.
I can't really tell you how many assets there are. I could tell you how many, but it doesn't really matter because somebody could go on and create as many assets as they have usage tokens available to create them. What matters is how many are being used in the community, and I can pretty much tell you that the answer is zero right now because Porkloom is so young. There are no assets being used in the community right now.
Okay. Let me ask you this. What about your vision for this? Tell me, like, what are you pitching this thing to businesses in the local area? How do you see people in the community using this as individuals and as merchants? And I mean from not just the standpoint of making payments to merchants, but also issuing issuing assets and the like in Loom that would be used different than someone just using a common currency through Loom, like a gold-based currency inside of the Pork. Also, let me reword this: inside the Pork Loom system, for example, somebody can go in and issue 1,000 gold coins, and the community members know where these coins are, and they're being audited and the like. And then people in the community can use this asset to exchange value and pay for services and all this. But the other aspect of individuals actually issuing, like in the Loom.cc, somebody issues a currency based on coffee or a currency based on work hours for particular people. How do you see – what is your vision that you see for this?
Well, unfortunately, because I'm at a university, a lot of people don't really care about liberty. They only care about girls and drinking. And it's on a very local level, an extreme local level here in Durham, New Hampshire. It's not going to be very easy for me to pitch this to merchants who don't already have an understanding of liberty.
Right.
So I don't really envision Pork Loom being used on campus for the stores in the area. It's more going to be our own little economy within New Hampshire among liberty activists.
Mm-hmm.
Because and a lot of people become skeptical when they say anonymous asset trading system, or when I say that to them, because they think, oh, anonymous, you know, you're creating these things to hide money from the feds. We're all going to go to jail, and this is not good. It sounds like money laundering or something like that.
Yeah.
So people who don't have an understanding of liberty are going to have a bad taste in their mouth when it comes to Porkloom, just because of the paradigm that they're living in. But my goal, what I envision is for one liberty activist to, let's say that they're at Rogers Campground at Porkfest, and they want to buy a hot dog for a certain amount of assets from a merchant at Agora Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go and they would walk up. They would have their cell phone out, and they would display a QR code. A QR code is a 2D barcode that encodes whatever information you want. A lot of times they have QR codes that have links to websites, and people can take pictures of them with their phone, and then their phone can interpret the black and white dots and get some information out of it.
Right, yeah.
So what I envision is, you know, somebody wants to buy a hot dog, they type in a few things on their phone, they display a QR code, the merchant goes, takes a picture of that phone with their phone, then they conduct the transaction through, you know, the Verizon internet service that they have there, and it goes right through, payment received, thank you, here's your hot dog, here's your food, whatever. That's what I envision happening.
So you're looking at creating the client for that, for like, let's say, for this example, for an iPhone that would integrate with Porkloom.net?
That is in my plans. I do plan on creating an iPhone app and a Droid app. I have no experience doing that, so that's going to be that's a huge learning curve for me. I've never done any kind of mobile phone programming before, so that's going to be a very interesting and rewarding learning exercise. But I'll be doing that. Then I'll be implementing the QR code stuff, and you can print out a QR code on the website and effectively use it as a personal check.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, there's been many people talking about that type of a structure in the past, and they have started to work on them, trying to do the wallet type systems and the like. But now with it's so common now for these codes just to be captured with the camera built into the iPhone and then to be processed from there. So it's I think that you're going to find all the tools and a lot of example code and the like. This is not something completely from scratch. But what it's wonderful is that you are actually, you have these plans. You've already shown that you already re-implemented the Perl code and the Loom. And this is fantastic that you have these plans. This is not, we're not talking about vaporware or just people talking about what would be cool, because that's what people have been doing for 20 years. So this is it's wonderful, actually. Now, let me ask this. You re-implemented Loom completely, but from a functional level, I mean, I went to your site and I saw that you still need an invite. I haven't received I don't have an invite, so maybe we can work.
Oh, I can send you one. That's no problem.
After the show, let's send me one. I'll have a look around. What are the differences right now when someone logs into the Loom, someone who's familiar with loom.cc, and they come into your site at porkloom.net? What kind of differences are they going to see, first off, visually and layout, and then the process? You talked about the aha moment. It sounds like that all translates over, and you're doing basically the same thing. Have you changed anything? Does the system work any different?
Well, the user interface was lightly adapted from the Loom interface. I think that the Loom interface it looks a little old, but I've talked with Patrick before, and what he wants to focus on is functionality rather than how pretty it looks. And I want to market Pork Loom a lot in the community. Mm-hmm. And as much as I want people to understand that functionality is more important, not everybody does. A lot of people want the eye candy. A lot of people want those kind of things. And I want to market this heavily. And in order to appeal to the most amount of people, I need to have a slick user interface.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't create this user interface. I want to make that clear. I one of the banks that I have an account at in New Jersey, I kind of ripped the CSS and the layout from them. But then again, I don't believe in intellectual monopoly as a voluntarist. So
yeah,
and they're a huge conglomerate bank, so it's not like I'm.
Didn't rip it. You just copied some ideas. You duplicated.
Yeah.
You replicated.
Yes. But I put my own spin on it. The colors are the same.
Yeah, well, isn't with copyright law, you only need about 10% change or so? I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. But okay. So I didn't create the user interface, but I reorganized the user interface to match loom.cc. Someone who's familiar with Loom is instantly going to notice that once they receive their invite code, that the invite code looks a little funny. If you go on regular Loom, the invite code is a series of letters, all lowercase, and numbers, 0 through 9, A through F. It's known as hexadecimal.
Right.
And it's a certain length. I don't know off the top of my head what the length is for assets. I think it might be 32 digits, characters, something like that.
Yeah.
But what somebody who uses Porkloom will see is that these identifiers, these contact identifiers, these asset identifiers, they're 52 characters in length, and they're uppercase, lowercase, or excuse me, they're uppercase, they're A through Z and 0 through 9, so, okay. The reason why that happens is because the Porkloom grid space is 2 to the 256,
right,
is 200, is double the bits as the regular loom. So naturally the asset identifiers and the contact identifiers have to be longer. And I've encoded these identifiers in such a way to make it easy for people to read over the phone or to write down, so that they don't need to write down a million hex digits. I want there to be as little writing or copying and pasting as possible.
Yeah. Okay. But if once you log in, a person who's familiar with the Loom system is going to hit the ground running as far as using your system and issuing their own assets and the like, correct?
Yes. If you understand how Loom works, you can use Porkloom no problem. The user interface is really simple. It's a little bit different, like writing memos in your transaction history, but it's all the same. You'd have no problem.
Okay. Inside of your, well, in your plans for, you gave the example of how you were thinking on the iPhone app and making these transactions and the like. Do you have any interest, or are you talking with people, or do you foresee people issuing their own currencies and using those in special way to do a multi-dimensional type barter trade within the system?
I have no clue how the market is going to use Porkloom. Mm-hmm. I don't really care how people use it, so long as, you know, they use it and that we promote an agorist type of society in that way. I have a friend who's moving up from Florida. He's going to be meeting me. He's moving up for the Free State Project. He's going to be meeting up with me, and he's going to start his own asset. He expressed interest in doing that, and he's well known online throughout the community, okay. I think that he's going to be very successful. The great thing is that's a selling point of Porkloom, is that you can make money from this website if you want to.
Give us an example.
All right, so let me pull up the presentation that I did at the Agora I.O. conference.
Which we will be playing on Agora Street. I ripped down all the YouTube videos and extracted all the audio as MP3s, and we are going to be playing most of the conference sessions from Agora.io. Should be starting at the beginning of the week, so you'll be in there.
Very cool. Yeah, definitely. So one of the examples that I provided at the conference was an asset being provided. And if you understand how Loom works, you know, then this will be familiar to you. I'll just go over it briefly. Essentially, you have an empty safe, and people come to you, and they give you gold, or they give you an asset, let's call it gold. You certify to make sure that it's good, that it's pure. You store it in the vault, and you give them digital representations of that gold on Porkloom.
Yes.
Now, you can make money that way by, if they give you an ounce of gold, you only give them 0.995 ounces of gold, of digital gold on Porkloom.
Yes.
That is a way that you can make money, and it, you know, on the spread, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is the greatest thing about Porkloom, is that it's not just a way for me to make money selling usage tokens. There's a way for other people to make money. And if you give other people the tool to make money, they're going to want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion.
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
The other example is that the asset is pre-owned. For example, that's like I forget the guy's name, Knothouse, the guy who had the Liberty Dollar.
Mm-hmm. Bernard von Knothouse.
Yeah, Yeah, he from what I understand, he had a lot of silver already that he somehow had that people sent him, or excuse me, that people did not send him. And this is another way that Porklum could be used, is if you already have a stash of gold or silver or whatever asset you want, you could then accept FRNs or some other type of currency and then pay out with that in return.
Yes.
So that's one of the other things, is that instead of starting with your safe empty, you start with it full. Another one is a pseudo stock market. So if you want to if you want to start your own business, you can create an asset that says, you know, if you're the bearer, you're entitled to this, of some sort, and then the money would go towards the money that they give you would go towards your business. And when they trade it in, they could, you know, there could be some type of interest rate or something like that. So there's like a stock market kind of thing in there where people can trade so-called shares, which is really what it is that, you know, your business is an asset. And people are just trading little bits and pieces of that. So that's the pseudo stock market idea. You can also have a pseudo bond market where people will buy an asset from you for one price, and you may give it back at an inflated value in the future, which is essentially like earning interest. So it's like a bank in that respect.
Right. One example Patrick gave for that in another show was, well, I mean, you have the bond, but you can also raise money for an operation and say, harvest is coming, and I'm going to have so much coffee or vegetables or fruit or whatever on my farm, and I will sell you ahead of time so many pounds of this particular vegetables at a discount if you pay now. And that works as sort of a voucher, and that has a time on it. So when harvest time comes, they can redeem that for the actual food from the farm. But the advantage comes in for the farmer himself. He may need to buy, you know, particular items for his farm or supplies for the animals or this. And so it can be used to help jumpstart a business. These people can see it as an investment opportunity, and then they're holding on to this. It works sort of the same way as a bond.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then the one example that I like is gambling, where you can, because an asset is essentially a contract. So you could say, you know, I'll pay you 1 gram of gold to the bearer if England beats France on April 23rd. Mm-hmm. And you may not buy that for a gram. You may only buy that for 0.8 grams of gold.
Right.
And in that way, you're kind of like taking a bet. And I highly encourage people to use Porklum in whatever ways that they see fit. Don't be afraid just because the government says no.
Yeah, right. There's not much of a fine line between all of the different structures being played on Wall Street and what you just mentioned right there with everything they're doing with options and the like.
And the good thing is that all these currencies are in competition with one another.
Right.
So if, you know, the marketplace is going to handle the regulation in that respect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you have any issues as to where your server is located in fear of it being seized or the like?
No. Well, sort of. if you poke around enough, you'll find that the server is located in McLean, Virginia, which sounds absolutely horrible because it's like near the CIA.
I know. Anything located in Virginia just sends up red flags electronically for people on the net.
Yeah, I don't want to mislead people about that. The server is located there, and that is unfortunate. However, the reason why that the server is there is because when I was younger, probably around 16, a bunch of my friends and I, we wanted to pitch in and pay a little bit to get a dedicated server. And we got a dedicated server for about $60 a month, and then – and it was there, and that was before Pork Loom, you know, even started or, yeah. you know, even had the idea in my mind. So we were just using the server to communicate with each other through mailing lists and stuff. And then I started using the server for more and more and more things. And, you know, I have the server, you know, it's a dedicated server. And they even, the data center lowered the amount that I'm paying and increased the amount of hardware that I have by accident. So if I, this is like a one-time thing. They don't even know that they made this mistake. So I'm getting a lot more server resources at a cheaper price, but they didn't realize their mistake. So I don't want to give this up because it's so cheap. It's like it's a deal you will never get anywhere else. So unfortunately, I have to keep the server in Virginia. But what I again, the people need to realize that the server, the database, the way it is set up, if the feds try and go and seize it, there's going to be no way that they're going to be able to do anything with it. They're just going to see a big mass of numbers, and they're not going to be able to make sense of it. They're not going to be able to track it back. I have configured the server to not keep any logs of IP addresses. And if you're still worried about it, I have a Tor, the Onion Routing Project. I have a Tor hidden service up that people can access the website through.
Okay,
so I want to, you know, and even if the feds seize the server, the database is replicated live, transaction by transaction, to offsite data, off-site disaster recovery centers. I call them that just because it sounds cool.
Yeah.
But they're replicated to off-site disaster recovery centers, transaction by transaction live as they happen. So even if they do seize the server, because it's all open source anyway, I could have another instance of Pork Loom set up at another domain within an hour, and transactions can continue without anybody losing anything.
Yeah, that's
so
super.
I take all the connections are secured by OpenVPN and et cetera. And this is getting into the technical realm, but
yeah, that's fine.
You know, I want to make sure that there's as little skepticism as possible about this. I want to be as open and transparent and as secure as possible with this.
Yeah, well, you're just getting started with the system. If things start growing and you feel a need for, you know, more secure location, you can always take a route similar as what they've done with the Loom.cc server, which is the IP that you connect to go to the web server is not actually the physical web server. It's a, I guess, some type of proxy, a VPN tunnel chain, who knows how many levels deep and where it actually winds up to find the actual server.
And I can get hosting in Sweden. There's a really good website called prq.se where I think the Pirate Bay has a couple servers. And if I have limited means as a poor, struggling college student, so it's very, very difficult for me to find overseas hosting.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of have to, you know, take what I can get.
Yeah, well, you know, and as let me ask this though, it gets back to the question of the cost of running the server. And one of the things with the usage tokens was to help resource allocation. Now, do you not use the resource? Do you not use usage tokens in your system?
I do use usage tokens in the same way that Loom uses usage tokens. There's no difference.
Okay.
You know, the thing is that I only make money when I sell usage tokens, but eventually there's going to come a point where usage tokens are just going to be traded amongst other people.
Yeah.
I only make money when the system grows, essentially. So what I've set up is a merchants tab, and I'm going to offer advertising on the merchants page, as well as maybe dedicated support and customized programming for your website. For like $3 a month, you can get like a spot on the merchants page, or perhaps I'll have a bidding thing where you bid for the highest spot on the merchants page. And then in that way, I sort of can have a source of income, a stream of income, rather than just trying to sell usage tokens.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, you know, the number of business models that are out there, we don't even know. Because every time I sit down and have a conversation with someone about the system, there's these new things that pop up, and there's been ideas that you're bringing up right now.
And I'm sure that there's even going to develop more. That's what's interesting. I think Patrick said of Loom one time, and it's quoted on the website, something about Loom being economic dial tone. And what that implies is what I just said, that we don't even know all of the business models, because you really are creating a base system here that allows you to issue and monetize things yourself and to exchange with people and to do these cross trades. That's why I call it multidimensional bartering, because, you know, one person has one thing to pay for and you may not want it, but you know other people that want it. And then, you know, a deal goes through. And then these other systems that you're talking about, I think that there's a lot of things that can be done here. One of the things that we talked about on the Hawala show and a couple of the Loom shows is over-the-counter exchange systems. And I think you kind of touched on a little bit where someone comes in and they give you money and you give them I think the example you used was they come in and give you gold and then you give them representational tokens, or you issue your currency on that, and then you may keep a point. There's the other part of this that I find to be one of the most important business models for any business or individuals to get into this system. And there in New Hampshire, throughout the U.S., and throughout the entire world, and that is operating an OTC, over-the-counter exchange. And this is a way that people can get assets into Loom, into your Pork Loom or the Loom, and into any Loom system, and out of those systems on a local level based upon currently known networks of trust, just like people use for other forms of contraband. So the way that this would work would be in a particular community, people would know, hey, if I need to get this particular asset that's inside of the Pork Loom server, I don't need to send money off Western Union or give a bank account or, you know, the like. I can go over to, everyone knows that Joe is over the counter and he runs a little coffee shop over there in Keene. And you walk in and you throw $50 on the table, or a silver or gold coin or whatever he works in. But this just used Federal Reserve notes, because that's what most people are getting paid in and they have sitting around that who are not involved in these new alternate currency system. They say, all I have is dollars. So they walk into the coffee shop, throw down $50 and an email address or a number, or they just throw down the $50 and the guy gives them a little piece of paper.
They point their phones at each other and exchange QR codes and establish a contact ID that way.
There you go. You got your software running like that. They walk in, throw down $50. The guy takes the cash, sticks it under the counter, types in a little number on his phone. They hold it up to each other, and bam, that person has $50 worth of whatever that's converted into of the currency, you know, whatever their deal, whatever he's exchanging it for. And then they walk out of the coffee shop. And there was a hard transaction that took place there. The other person has the new asset. They can do anything they want to with it in the system. And Joe at the coffee shop, of course, as part of the transaction, they know that he dished out, $49 or he dished out $49 and he kept a dollar for himself. I don't know the business model. I'm not saying that's the
Very good. That's very good, because it distributes the liability.
Absolutely.
So that not you don't have a Liberty Dollar situation where there's one central location where all these assets exist and they can be taken.
Right. And one level beyond that is with the Liberty Dollar, then you have the same thing that happened with the E-Gold, where they came in and took all the assets from all the gold, stole all the gold from the depositors and the like without due process. And in that situation, E-Gold themselves, they were set up where they did not allow anyone. You couldn't just send E-Gold cash and get E-Gold. You had to work through an exchanger. But that still creates a system where you have a network of exchangers that have their necks up, sticking up out of the ground. And shortly after the whole E-Gold fiasco and leading up to the Liberty Reserve, the Justice Department and other people are putting out all these regulations and new rules based about how they define a money service business. And that may be anyone, you know, if you, someone walks up to you and says, hey, can I exchange $10, I have this $10 of Canadian money I just got back from Canada, can I exchange it for, you know, you do this with your brother, can you give me some US dollars for this, because I know you're going to Canada next month, you can, you know, and you do it, that's illegal. I mean, you don't have a license to do it. The federal government's going to tell you that you can't do that. In reality, as it's the big bankers are telling you can't do it, because they don't want you doing this. This cuts into their little monopoly that they have going with the government and the whole banking cartel. So,
and I'm not going to give in to pressure. I can't really make that statement, actually, definitively, but I'm going to resist as much as possible. I encourage people to not follow the law and follow the, you know, common law, essentially, or voluntarism, mm-hmm. and the non-aggression principle. Don't be afraid to use Portland just because some people tell you that it's illegal. That once you get over that fear, then, you know, life becomes so much more interesting. But one thing I wanted to mention about the over-the-counter thing is that it doesn't have to be a physical counter. It can also be a digital counter. For example, Porkloom, I didn't mention this, I think it's important. Porkloom has an API, or I should say it has a method by which other websites can interact with it in an automated fashion. So if you own a website that you sell stuff on, or an online exchange website, you can have people pay you in PayPal,
right?
And your website will see that PayPal payment has gone through successfully, and then you can program your server to automatically send you the Porkloom asset in exchange, just like that, completely automated in a couple clicks.
Right.
So so Porkloom has another aspect to it in that anybody can. Or has access to the lower level functions of the website, so that they can remotely connect to it and conduct transactions in an automated fashion.
Yeah.
So you can pay for stuff online. I mean, you could have an eBay. You could go on, you know, one of the examples that I used in my Agora I.O. conference talk was, you know, you go on Amazon.com and they say, oh, we got a section for you to enter in your Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and there's also a section for Porkloom, so enter in your payment details. Because essentially, a contact identifier is like a debit card, and it can be stored in your account on Amazon, let's say, in the same way that your credit card information is stored.
Yeah.
It's that easy.
Yeah. This is very exciting. You know, we're closing up here, getting close to the end of the show here. We have just a few minutes left. On a technical note, before I go into any of this, I'm just going to check out the source code. After the show here, why don't you go ahead and send me some links to the GitHub URL and your website and the video that you have for agora.io. I'll post all of those as reference material on this when it goes up in the podcast and live play archive.
And just a few seconds ago, I sent you an invite code online. So you'll be able to go around and play with that.
Great. Yeah, I'll do that. Thank you very much. Is there anything you wanted to say before we take off here? We got about a minute and a half.
People talk about Bitcoin in the Liberty community, and they think that it is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that I want to make very clear is that Bitcoin is a type of currency. Porkloom is a piece of accounting software.
Yes, great. Okay.
So you could trade Bitcoins on Porkloom. So Porkloom is not a currency. Porkloom is a piece of software that allows you to trade currencies.
Right.
And that's a key difference.
It is.
So and two, there's no transaction history other than the one that you choose to voluntarily keep in your account.
Mm-hmm.
With Bitcoin, there is a, I remember when I downloaded my client, I had to download 2 years worth of transaction history for every single Bitcoin that ever was created and that ever was transacted.
Right. So, and there's some global adversary who has access to IP addresses and communication logs,
and
the data traffic analysis can put together a lot there. So this system is complementary. It's not a either or.
Yeah, it's not mutually exclusive, right. Exactly. And it's not like Bitcoin is secure, but people don't use it in a secure way. For example, people say, "Oh, you know, you can send me donations, and you can send it to this thing, and they'll often put it in their signature for their profile on a forum." And they'll say, "Oh, if you, you know, send me a donation or whatever." Well, the thing is that all those transactions that they get are recorded and published, so that and that public key is then associated with their pseudonym,
yeah.
Which is essentially their identity in real life anyway. It's not that hard for the feds to figure out who that is. So they can see how much money you're getting by linking your public key to your identity and seeing all the funds you receive.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So you need to create a new private key for every single incoming transaction that you make in order for it to be really secure. With Porklume, it's kind of like a back channel. It's sort of like putting a marble underneath some cups and then swapping the cups around.
Right, right. We're going to be doing in the next week a few shows on all other digital cash systems like Open Transactions, and we'll be talking about Loom and greater detail of integration and complementary usage with Bitcoin. So,
I hope that everyone can look at the Free State Project, and if you think that that Liberty has a chance, move to New Hampshire and come do civil disobedience with us. I really want to see you here in New Hampshire if you support Liberty.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Alex, for coming on the show. I think that we may be able to do a few more shows because there's a lot of cross interest here just besides Loom and the things that we're working on. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. Everyone, that was Alex Weed, and he is working on the porkloom.net project, among other things. We'll have information and the podcast up on the website. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow for another show of Cypherpunked. Goodbye.
Dodge this.
This is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. AgoristRadio.com is sponsored by MetroPipe.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
Broadcasting from deep within the Second Realm, you are listening to AgoristRadio.com.